This is Nightly Business Report with Tyler Matheson and Sue Herrera.
Electric shock. GE cuts its dividend for only the second time since the Great Depression. And that's not all it's slashing.
Paying dividends after GE's cut, what are some safer investments that pay you back?
Fueling up as airlines pay more, will fares go higher? Those stories and more tonight on Nightly Business Report for Monday, November 13th.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome. It hasn't been a pretty year for General Electric, and today it was downright ugly. The embattled company outlined a new agenda with a renewed focus, aggressive cost cutting, and a reduced dividend. On an investor call, the CEO of the 125-year-old industrial conglomerate said the changes mark an opportunity of a lifetime to reinvent an iconic company. But on the same call, he also apologized for the company's poor performance. So far this year, shares of this widely held stock that you probably own in a retirement account, mutual fund, or an ETF are down 40%. Today, after announcing GE's turnaround strategy, the stock lost 7% of its value on very heavy volume, its worst day since 2009. Morgan Brennan takes a look at the road ahead for GE.
Cut dividend, cut guidance, cut assets. Those cuts are the crux of General Electric's new strategy under CEO John Flannery. Today, Flannery, who took the helm in August, outlined big changes for the struggling industrial giant.
Going forward, we really just have to focus on how we can create the most value from the portfolio of assets that we have for our owners. And we're going to do that with a very dispassionate eye.
For only the third time since 1899, GE's dividend was cut today, reduced by half, as the new CEO looks to drum up cash and remake the company. GE has long been bought for that payout, with about 40% of shareholders retail investors, many dependent on that income. Still, the move was widely expected. What wasn't was the guidance.
The market is just having a really difficult time and sort of envisioning what GE's long-term trajectory is going to be and where the company is going to sort of, shake out at the end of all of this.
GE now forecasts profit of $1 to $1.07 per share next year, 50% less than originally anticipated. That sent shares of the Dow's oldest component tumbling. But Flannery also outlined a new strategy, one focused on GE's core businesses of power, aviation, and healthcare. Over the next 2 years, he plans to exit more than a dozen others, including transportation and lighting, a GE business harking back to the days of Thomas Edison. Even the stake in oilfield services giant Baker Hughes could be up for grabs. But it will all take time. The reason Flannery says 2018 will be a reset year, one that will be, quote, extremely hard with major changes and detailed execution. After that, though, he says profit should grow, and with it, hopefully, finally, the stock. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Morgan Brennan in New York City.
Well, Ivan Feinseth joins us now to talk a little bit more about GE's turnaround plan and the road ahead for the company. He is a partner and chief financial officer at Tigress Financial Partners. Ivan, good to have you in the studio tonight.
Thank you.
Is this the bottom for General Electric?
I think this marks the bottom. This sell-off today on the dividend cut, I think, is the reaction, is the final sell-off where all of the income funds had to sell it. I think it needed a bold move, and the dividend cut was a bold move.
Is it a parabolic move back or a little bouncing along the bottom before it begins to get some traction?
Well, I think that at current levels, it could represent a long-term opportunity. I don't think it goes right up, but what the CEO spoke about today, Flannery spoke about, is being focused. He spoke about cost cutting, and he spoke about a company that's focused in healthcare, in aviation, and in power generation. So he pretty much said health, light, and flight is going to be the company's focus. The dividend, I think, was the bold move that shows he's committed to turning the company around.
Others on the street, though, think that the stock price and the reaction today is telling a different story, that he needs to do more, that he missed an opportunity, and that the company needs to be broken up.
Well, I don't think breaking up a conglomerate makes a better company. If you break it up, then there would be nothing left. I think being a more focused company will be positive. Now, everybody's going to wait and see what the results are, but I think we're probably close to a bottom in the stock. And I think the new leadership and some of the new actions are usually what it takes to put in the bottom and change the direction of a company.
He had to cut the dividend, right?
Well, I think for 2 points is one, it does free up cash. Second, it shows that he's willing to take bold moves, and that is the key. GE has needed a seismic shift for quite some time. And also, the current dividend of 48 cents versus the new earnings per share guidance puts it in line with the targeted dividend payout of 45%. So he is now going back to the disciplined ratios that they have tried to live within.
If you had a near-term target for the stock, and you've been looking for a dividend cut for a while, so they've now achieved that objective in your mind. If you had a near-term target for the stock, what would it be?
Well, I think it probably stays around the $19, $20 range for a while, maybe to the end of the year, because you're going to have some tax loss selling. Mm-hmm. And then I think that for the long term, if this is an opportunity to buy an iconic company, and in many cases, when you buy good companies, when they're going through a hard time, it has paid off. Mm-hmm. So, and GE has had a hard time for a long time. So I think that the things are in place for a bottom. The next thing we need is the catalyst that will make the stock go up.
If this were politics, the current CEO / president would be blaming the predecessor CEO / president.
Yes.
How much of that would be valid criticism?
Yes, I think he's being politically correct by not doing that, because the market has done that, and you know, no point to blame somebody else. But the prior CEO made a lot of bad decisions and timed a lot of his decisions poorly as well. And I think it's all about looking forward, and he
right.
wants to change the company for the future.
Right.
And he's going, I mean, GE is probably the leading jet engine manufacturer, and there's strong jet engine demand. I mean, look how well Boeing is doing, and there's big demand for jet engine upgrades in existing planes and greater fuel efficiency and upgraded jet engines for helicopters and all kinds of aircraft. Military orders are strong. They are winning a lot of contracts for new military orders. So the jet engine business
is
doing phenomenally
well. So they're in a good spot
yes.
there. Ivan, thank you very much. Fantastic. Ivan Feinseth with Tigress Financial Partners. And later in the program, we'll get some investing ideas from a market pro who says the dividends are safe at the companies he recommends.
Well, despite GE's sharp decline, the broader market managed to close slightly higher. Sentiment on Wall Street has been driven by deals lately, and today, reports that Hasbro made a takeover offer for Mattel that we told you about on Friday contributed to the buying. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was up 17 points to 23,439. The NASDAQ added 6, and the S&P 500 rose 2.
New developments in a proposed mega merger. Qualcomm has rejected Broadcom's $105 billion acquisition offer, setting the stage for possibly one of the biggest takeover battles ever. Qualcomm says the offer undervalues the company and that putting the two together would spawn regulatory issues. Broadcom says it continues to believe that its proposal is attractive and that it's encouraged by the reaction of stakeholders. Both companies count Apple among their biggest customers.
A Federal Reserve official today said he expects to back an interest rate increase next month. Philadelphia Fed President Patrick Harker added that inflation, which has drifted lower, continues to make him cautious. This has happened even as unemployment has fallen. The central bank has raised rates twice this year. Harker is considered a centrist, though, when it comes to monetary policy.
Oil prices rose ever so slightly today to settle above $56 a barrel to near a 2.5-year high. Over the past month, domestic crude prices have risen more than 10%. The increase is exactly what OPEC wants to see, and the cartel hopes that the longtime glut of crude will soon turn into a deficit. Jackie DeAngelis explains.
As crude oil nears $60 a barrel, every move OPEC makes is being carefully watched. In its October report, the powerful group of producers reported production fell slightly by 150,000 barrels a day to a little more than 32.5 million barrels. While the drop wasn't dramatic, it did show that production is headed in the right direction and that compliance with the group's promised production cuts is high. Even more telling where production dropped. Iraq and Iran, countries that ramped up output in the past, reduced it a bit last month. Saudi Arabia and Libya still showing increases. While the market has been focused on these supply points, it's also paying careful attention to demand forecasts This report increased expectations slightly for next year to almost 100 million barrels per day, citing China, Europe, and India as the key drivers of growth.
We're all going to be focused on the OPEC member meeting November 30th. That has been the driver. They've seen the effectiveness of their production cuts. But right now, it seems like they want to extend those production cuts, be very clear and succinct to the market that these cuts are going to be another 9 months all the way through 2018. And that effectively takes 2 million barrels a day off the market. And that is really focusing and drilling in on the supply equation.
Meantime, here in the United States, higher prices have meant more production. The Energy Information Administration reporting last week that U.S. output eclipsed its 2015 high. The worry that shale's emergence as a swing producer could swing prices the other way. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Jackie DeAngelis.
Coming up, are companies bearing the brunt of the massive breach at the NSA?
Bitcoin has had a very volatile few days. The price of the cryptocurrency rose today, rebounding after losing almost a third of its value in less than 4 days. Many believe that the fall that began late last week was because of a decision to abandon a software upgrade that would have made the network more practical for users and ultimately help lower fees. Bitcoin has gained nearly 600% this year still, but investors remain divided on the future of the alternative currency.
Wall Street bankers may see higher bonuses this year for the first time in 4 years. According to a survey from the consulting firm Johnson Associates, incentive pay is expected to rise by 5 to 10%. Bankers who work on corporate debt and stock offerings will likely see the biggest jumps, but traders are expected to see a drop in their bonus pay.
The president nominated a drug company executive to be the next Secretary of Health and Human Services. Alex Azar was until January the head of Eli Lilly's U.S. division. He also served as a deputy at the HHS department under George W. Bush. The announcement was made by President Trump in a Twitter post while he was in Asia. He tweeted that Azar, quote, will be a star for better health care and lower drug prices, exclamation point. Former HHS Secretary Tom Price resigned in September amid controversy over the use of chartered flights for government travel.
The president will head to Capitol Hill on Thursday to speak to House Republicans about their push for tax reform. House leaders could put their tax bill on the floor that same day. Congress wants to finish the legislation before the end of the year.
The National Security Agency, or NSA, was the victim of a deeply intrusive cyber breach. That we know. What we didn't know was that the breach has taken a very big toll on the country's most secretive intelligence agency. And the business community has something to say about it. Eamon Javers reports.
The headline in the New York Times was arresting. Security breach and spilled secrets have shaken the NSA to its core. The fallout from the paper's reporting, adding new details to accounts of an anonymous group called Shadow Brokers, badly penetrating the American spy agency, stealing some of its most valuable cyber weapons, and selling them on the black market, rippled through the cybersecurity industry Monday. The extent of the damage is stunning. The Times reported the hack has led to millions of computers shut down, thousands of corporate employees' data wiped, and business disruptions from Britain to Brazil. All with cyber tools that American taxpayers paid to develop. And it's all reviving a long-running debate inside the cybersecurity industry. Should the NSA even be in the offensive cybersecurity business, or should it just focus on cyber defense? And what about the companies that have found themselves bearing the brunt of the damage so far? Some argue the NSA has to stay in the offensive cyber hacking game because the secrets it can steal are vital to American national security, even though American companies sometimes pay the price.
Companies are going to get hurt, unfortunately, and they will end up being effectively collateral damage, but it's not going to be, it doesn't make a difference as to whether that collateral damage is caused by the U.S. and the NSA or a foreign intelligence service. If the NSA isn't finding vulnerabilities, you can be sure that a foreign intelligence service still is.
But others are questioning whether simply gathering all these software vulnerabilities in one place is actually making American companies more vulnerable.
The idea that we would put so much trust, so much of the kind of single points of data of a failure in the hands of a single organization is something that we need to reexamine, not only as corporations or as individuals, but I think as a country as a whole.
One analyst told me today that big companies have always been damaged in warfare. Countries bomb ports, burn fields, and damage infrastructure in armed conflict. But this is peacetime, and the biggest concern for American companies is that there's no end in sight, meaning that corporations are the soft underbelly that nation-states are attacking in this new below-the-radar type of conflict. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Eamon Javers in Washington.
And the NSA had this to say in response to Eamon's report, quote, the NSA regularly discloses information concerning IT vulnerabilities that NSA personnel discover during the course of their foreign intelligence activities. If the government decides to withhold a vulnerability from release, it does so only after careful consideration of the relative risks.
Roku inks another licensing deal, and that's where we begin tonight's Market Focus. The streaming device maker said it signed a licensing agreement with Japan's Funai Electric to incorporate Roku technology into Philips-branded televisions, and that deal would begin this year. Roku's operating system is currently included on several television brands. Roku shares popped 28% to $42.71. Tyson Foods reported a higher-than-expected profit as a drop in animal feed costs helped to beef up results. The meat processor and producer also topped analyst sales expectations and said it saw strong demand for chicken and beef products in the latest quarter. Shares of Tyson Foods higher by nearly 2% to $75.59. The mall owner General Growth Properties received a nearly $15 billion offer from Brookfield Property Partners to buy the remaining GGP shares it doesn't already own. General Growth said it's reviewing the bid. Shares of Brookfield Property Partners fell nearly 5% to $22.50, but shares of General Growth Properties took off 8% to $24.05.
A rise in sales helped China's JD.com report an unexpected profit. The e-commerce company managed to top expectations even as it lost about 100,000 merchants to competitors leading up to China's major shopping event, Singles Day. JD.com said it expects apparel growth to be a weak spot for the company as it recovers from the loss of major clothing brands. JD.com shares, though, up more than 3% on the session at $41.34. Madison Square Garden's chief executive officer, David O'Connor, stepping down from his role, being replaced now in the interim by executive chairman James Dolan. The entertainment venue did not offer a reason for O'Connor's departure. Shares of MSG were off 2% to $225 on the button. And after the bell, it was reported that the private equity firm Roark Capital Group is invested in taking over Buffalo Wild Wings. The Wall Street Journal says Roark offered more than $2 billion plus two dozen celery sticks for the chicken wing chain. Shares initially took off after hours trading, but ended the regular day off 1% to $117.25.
Uber has reached a deal with Japanese tech investor SoftBank. Uber has not disclosed exactly how much SoftBank will invest in the ride-hailing company. That deal comes after months of internal conflict within Uber's board. And it represents an early win for Uber's new CEO and could give the world's most valuable startup an ally as it expands operations across the globe.
Well, Walmart reportedly has a new strategy to get more customers in the doors of its stores. The plan includes raising prices online, where it costs less to sell something. According to the Wall Street Journal, Walmart has already hiked the price of some household items, including Colgate toothbrushes and Purina dog food. The world's largest retailer recently tripled its online selections for the holiday season.
Well, from prices at Walmart to prices airlines pay to fuel up. After 2 years of enjoying relatively low fuel prices, the industry is now facing an old worry, dealing with higher costs. The question now is whether those increased costs will make airfares more expensive. Phil LeBeau takes a look.
Is this the return of an old headache for airlines? Jet fuel prices, which have been relatively low, are now moving higher, up roughly 10% since the beginning of October. In fact, jet fuel prices are now at their highest point since 2015. For airlines and their investors, the rise in costs is a concern they haven't had in several years, But since jet fuel is the biggest expense an airline faces outside of labor, the higher prices are worth watching. What does it mean for travelers, especially heading into the busy holiday season? Fares through the end of the year are unlikely to change much. And with heavy demand, the few seats still unsold will likely command a higher price. But beyond that, the focus is on airfares in the first half of next year.
Typically, airfares go up in the spring as airlines anticipate more people flying. But next year, if jet fuel prices keep rising, airlines could feel pressure to raise fares faster and more than usual. Phil LeBeau, Nightly Business Report, Chicago.
Still ahead, the hunt for yield stocks that you can count on to pay you back over the long term. We'd love to get your help for an upcoming program we're putting together on retirement. On Thanksgiving, we will examine the retirement crisis we hear about all the time, and we want you to be a part of it. So go to our website, nbr.com, click on Contact Us, and tell us your story. Are you having trouble putting away enough money to retire? Why? What happened? What, if anything, are you doing to fix it? You can also go to our Facebook page and post a comment or tweet us at BIZRPT, there's a chance that your story will be part of our broadcast.
As we told you earlier, GE cut its dividend today, and with many investors turning to higher-yielding dividend stocks for retirement income, where else should you be looking for yield that's safe and not at risk of being slashed? Paul Schatz joins us now with some ideas to consider. He is the market strategist and president of Heritage Capital. Paul, welcome. Nice to have you here.
Good to see you. So,
just a brief note on GE. You say the dividend cuts are a lagging indicator, coming mostly at the end of a long decline for the stock. That certainly applies to GE. But what should you be looking for if you want stocks where the dividend is safer than what we see at GE?
And that's right. Dividend cuts really come at usually, if it's a football game, the fourth quarter of the game, the fourth quarter of the decline when volatility expands. If you're looking kind of the opposite, some safer things to look at. One, stocks that are kind of quote unquote safer from having dividend cuts are not in huge downtrends. They're either going sideways or stocks are rallying. So that'd be number one, which is pretty simple to look at. Number two, if you simply divide the dividend by the earnings, not to get too technical, which is called the dividend payout ratio. It's dividend divided by the earnings. If a company's paying too much out in the dividend, well, obviously the dividend is in jeopardy of being cut. And also, if it's too good to be true, many times it is. So if people are looking at dividends of 7, 8, 9, 10%, not all companies are in jeopardy of cutting them, but there's certainly a more high risk to get cut if those dividend yields are really fat in a very low dividend environment.
Yeah, some of those high yields are really siren songs. Macy's, I think, has the highest dividend yield in the S&P 500, but you point to that one as one that might be in the untouchable category, right?
No, I think, to me, Macy's looks a lot like GE. It's got its own, so retail has a problem, industrials don't, where GE resides. But look, Macy's, to me, looks like it's a dividend just waiting and craving to be cut, and it probably will get cut. And everyone is so freaked out about retail because of the Amazon bogey out there. I wouldn't go near Macy's. I think retail in general is bouncing now. It'll get benefit from the January effect, where the most beaten down stocks rise into year end and early in the new year. But I think the bottom for retail stocks is down the road ahead of us, not right here.
So you've given us three names that you think where you think the dividend is safe. U.S. Bancorp, a little bit lower dividend, 2.3%. But you think the stability of the stock really plays into the stability of the dividend?
It's one of, if not the most stable, well-run banks on earth. So, yes, the dividend yield's a little lower, but I think they're actually underreporting earnings. They're holding back. They're reserving more for bad loans, but the bad loans are not springing up for them. So I think That's a great story for 2018, 19, and beyond. And they only pay out 30% of their earnings to investors in the form of dividends. That's a really good one.
The other two, Pfizer and Brinker. Paul, we have to leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Paul Schatz with Heritage Capital.
Well, Bill Gates has a new mission. The founder of Microsoft is making a big investment to fight Alzheimer's, and he's hoping big data can help find a solution. The philanthropist will invest $50 million in the Dementia Discovery Fund to accelerate research. The investment is a personal one, not part of his foundation. It will be followed with another $50 million put into a number of startup ventures working on less mainstream approaches to the disease. More than 5 million Americans live with Alzheimer's, and that number is expected to grow.
And finally tonight, if you are, forgive me, flush with cash, listen to this. A fully functioning Louis Vuitton-covered golden toilet can now be yours. The artist behind the toilet used 24 different signature Louis Vuitton bags and a suitcase to cover the commode. The piece is on sale for $100,000 on the online website Tradesy. Call it a lavish loo.
Or the most expensive pay toilet of all time.
Oh, my goodness.
That gives new meaning to that phrase.
It does. It's not even... I won't. Good night. That's it for us. I'm Sue Herrera. Thanks for joining us.
I'm Tyler Matheson. Have a great evening, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow.